This is Denise Lee Yan, and welcome to the Brand as Business Bites podcast. The Brand as Business Bites podcast features great stuff for your brain to chew on, including insights and interviews with newsmakers, brand builders, and thought leaders. It's available on iTunes and on my website, DeniseLeeYan.com. Today, I'm talking with Ari Weinzweig, founding partner of Zingerman's Community of Businesses, which includes Zingerman's Deli, Zingerman's Creamery, and Zingerman's Bakehouse. Now, Zingerman's has been one of my favorite brands ever since I discovered it in college when I visited my friends who were attending University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, and we would treat ourselves to Zingerman's sandwiches. Once I became a student of brands, I discovered that Zingerman's was a very admirable brand, given its unique culture, standards of operation, and business model. People around the world study and learn from Zingerman's on how to run great businesses, become great leaders, and build great brands. So I was delighted when I got to meet Ari at a conference earlier this year that we were both speaking at. I have so enjoyed reading Ari's books, and I'm glad he's here today to talk with me about his latest book, Zingerman's Guide to Good Leading, Part 4, A Lapsed Anarchist's Approach to the Power of Belief in Business. Welcome, Ari.
Thanks for having me on, Denise. It's a pleasure.
Now, Ari, as the title of your book suggests, this is part four in a series of books that you've written about business and leadership. And you've written so much good stuff that I feel like we could talk for hours, but I'm really going to try to keep our conversation focused today on your new book and the topic of the power of belief in business. So let me start with a quote from your book. You write, "Every single thing we do, every single thing we experience, everything others around us do is being radically influenced and more often not initiated by beliefs. Strongly held beliefs are at the core of everything we experience." So tell me how you came to this conclusion.
Yep. It's, well, that's the whole book. It's, you know, obviously I knew, it's not like the term beliefs was unfamiliar to me. But I think at least in my, you know, life experience, which isn't that short, mostly beliefs focus in conversation focus around religion, politics, and sports, where people sort of banter back and forth. You know, people rarely change their minds, but they share their beliefs pretty quickly. But I really had never thought very much about the importance and critical nature now, I would say, of beliefs in the work that we do. And and of course, it's 100% applicable in our lives outside of work, too. But, you know, because it's framed as a business book, that's how it's set up. But two things got me going. One was really out of a frustration I was having with a work group that we had put together. We have about 700 people in the organization. We do about $60 million in sales, and we have, I think, 10 businesses now. So we're sort of always pulling together work groups across the organization to deal with big issues. And we had a quality issue that extended across the organization. And as a result, we pulled together this work group of partners, key staff, et cetera, to deal with it. As you know from the earlier books, we do a lot with visioning. So we wrote a whole vision for the project. Some of the people on it had equity, we had a lot of seniority, all the things that you would think by all rights normally would make a work group successful. And yet it just would not get going. And there was clearly a quality problem. So it wasn't like it was a fallacious construct. We needed to deal with this, but there just couldn't get any traction. And around that time, I was reading Bob and Judith Wright. They have a book called Transform. They run the Wright Institute in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And in there, among other things, is a little cycle. It's on page 91 of my book. And it's basically a self-fulfilling belief cycle. So I learned it from them. They learned it from somebody else they can't remember. So I don't know who to give credit to, but it's been a transformative thing as per the title of their book. So really quickly, and I know people can't look at it, but basically, we start with a belief. Based on our beliefs, we will take action. Based on our actions, others around us will form beliefs about us or about the work at hand, and then they will act based on that belief. So in a really simple workplace setting. Let's say somebody has low self-confidence. They believe that people don't really care about their perspectives and opinions. Based on that belief, when they get in a meeting, what's the action they're likely to take? Typically, they won't say anything. They'll be quiet through the meeting all the time. Based on their quiet and lack of participation, the others in the meeting start to believe that they don't care, or they don't have much to say, or they're not really contributing or interested in contributing or committed to the organization. And based on that, people will then, of course, not ask their opinion and leave them out of conversations, which will just reinforce the original belief that no one cares about their opinions. And this works in a positive way, too. So this cycle is going on all day long in all of our lives. You know, you're in marketing and branding work. I mean, when people, you know, the whole point of the brand, right, is to get people to believe certain things about the brand. And for you and I, hopefully that's based on substance, not on flash. But, you know, when people buy a Zingerman's product, it's in the belief that it's going to be a high quality product and that the money is going to a organization that focuses on social sustainability, et cetera, et cetera. You know, when we get in a relationship with somebody, we have beliefs about that person, et cetera. So the beliefs really are everywhere.
Wow. So when you use the word beliefs, I'm kind of wondering, like, how do they differ from other words that kind of seem related? Like, how do beliefs differ from values or philosophies or principles or just what people consider, like, the truth? Can you explain that
right
to me, please?
Yeah, I the best thing I'm going to do is actually just read you a quote from another writer, which is Kevin Birmingham, a British writer who's written a little bit about beliefs. He said, beliefs are simply a feeling of conviction or certainty that something is real or true. They're based on our past experiences and what others have taught us. Beliefs are our best guess at reality. So the phrases you've used are all related. I guess for me, you know, values basically are ethical stances, so they are also beliefs. So I guess what I would say is that all beliefs, all values are beliefs, but not all beliefs are values. So what we believe about foreign cars, what we believe about what's a reasonable work week, what we believe about Sunday, you know, I'm in an industry that work 7 days a week. I don't have kids. I'm not religious. Sunday is really no different to me to work Sunday than it is to work Wednesday. It's just another day to contribute positively, and I don't ever feel bad about working Sunday. But I think most people in the U.S. would say that if they have to work Sunday, there's some really negative connotation about that. And that's a belief, right? So that's not a values issue unless it's about religion. It's not a values issue. It's just something that we've been informed by society or people in our lives who go, oh, man, what a bummer. You got to work Sunday. That sucks. And
right.
And so out of that, we sort of we're acting on that belief. And if you can imagine what people's energy would be like if they've been hearing that from their friends all day when they get to work, it's unlikely that that day is going to go really well. And it's basically because it started with negative beliefs.
Yeah, well, so that's a really good example of, or a setup for my next question, which is that you, in your book, you write that beliefs are not fixed, and so that you can actually
right
change a belief. And so in the case of, you know, the the worker who has to work on Sunday, you'd want them to change the belief about working on Sunday. So in your book, you lay out a six-step recipe for changing the belief, and I was just hoping you could kind of walk us through that and give us an example of when you changed one of your beliefs.
Yeah, sure. So the metaphor that I use in the book for beliefs is that they're the root system of our lives. So basically, when you talk to sustainable growers of great produce, it turns out they almost never talk about how the tomato tastes or how the peach tastes. What they always talk to me about is the health of the soil, the root system, and the seed variety. So metaphorically, I started to imagine the soil as the culture of our organizations. When it's healthy, what does well in it, what grows in it will do much better. The root system, when it's healthy and deep, you anchor the culture, you anchor the soil, and what grows above it is tied to that and to the seed that we choose, which would be hiring or selection of ideas or value, you know, concepts that we choose to put into place in our organization. So So the beliefs are the root system. You can't see them, but what comes up above the surface, it's kind of obvious, is directly tied to what's below the surface. My favorite quote in the book is from Alexander Berkman, an early 20th century anarchist who wrote, "You can't grow a rose from a cactus seed." No way
so
around
true,
it.
Right?
So I started to group in the book. There's three categories I look at in beliefs: negative beliefs, neutral beliefs, and positive beliefs. It's kind of obvious in hindsight, but negative beliefs lead to negative outcomes. Neutral beliefs don't do a whole lot, and positive beliefs lead to positive outcomes. And in the spirit of Alexander Berkman's quote, you can't get positive outcomes from negative beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
So as we start to become much more aware of our beliefs in all this context, we might realize that some of our beliefs are negative, and they're causing, through that cycle that I went over a few minutes ago, negative outcomes that are really not helpful.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote about in the book a number of my beliefs that have changed. A really simple one: I grew up in a family where no one was in business, and I had very negative beliefs about business. My limited social experience of business when I, as a kid, was business did bad things to people generally, and I didn't really want any part of being in one. And that the two jobs, you know, choices that you got were to put a suit on and work in an office, which I didn't want to do, or work on a factory floor, which didn't sound that great either. And so I had very negative beliefs. My partner, Paul Saginaw, grew up where his grandfather had a very community-minded, very generous spirit business, and he gave Paul these really positive beliefs, right? And so Paul taught me early on when we met in 1978, I guess, you know, that business was just a tool, and that what you did with the tool was up to you. You could do bad things with it, or you could do good things. And in the same way you could hit somebody in the head with a hammer and harm them, or you could build a home for a family without a home, it's exactly the same hammer. It's just the way you put it to use. So when we realize that we have a belief that, you know, we got from our parents, we learned it from society, you know, whatever it might be, there is a recipe in the book to walk people through making that change, because if we keep the same beliefs, we're going to keep getting the same outcome, even if we try to stop the superficial behavior. The corollary, going back to the agricultural metaphor, would be if you pick a weed at the surface line, we all know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
The weed's going to just grow back. So it looks better for a day or two or a week, but a week later, the exact same weed that was bothering you will be there. And so this is the same in our lives. If we just stop the behavior without changing the belief, it'll get better for a little while, but we'll revert right back to it. You know, and by the way, you know, racism is just a negative belief. So those beliefs people inherited, let's say socially, in the community or in the news or whatever that they had. And so when we teach people, not in a bad way, classes of what not to say, it's kind of helpful. But
mm-hmm.
if the belief below the surface doesn't change under pressure, they're just going to revert back to what they're used to. So very
right.
quickly, the six-step recipe is, number one is to identify the issue. So if there's let's say you're stressed about working Sundays and it's really causing you a lot of, you know, aggravation, and then when you get home from work, you're crabby and you're getting in a fight with your significant other, and then they're giving you grief. So that would be an issue, right? Then we want to backtrack to the beliefs, and there's processes in the book of how to do that. But in the moment, let's just say you do that and you say, well, what do I really believe about working Sundays? I mean, most of us have never taken the time to actually reflect on that, right? So if you say, well, my parents always worked Monday through Friday, and you know, we always believed the weekend was for rest, and, you know, whatever, we start to find out what that is. Then we need to do a little homework. You know, where did it really come from? You know, who put this belief in my head? Because we're not born with our beliefs. We learn them from other people. The fourth step is to sort of check the equation. What am I getting out of holding on to this belief? So maybe there's something to gain from it, and it's more important to you to keep the belief that working Sunday is a bad thing. But at least you make a mindful choice that these are the outcomes that go with that belief, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the fifth thing, if you choose to change it, is to consciously make a choice to choose a new belief. The irony is we think that the data has to come before we adopt the belief, but it's actually the other way around, which is that we'll start to see things differently when we do change the belief. And then you got to stick with it over a period of months and years to really erode the old patterns, right? So you know, the root system's not going to just die in a day. If you're 40 years old, you've got 40 years probably of having this belief, and you're not going to change it in 4 days. So really sticking with it. And there's a bunch of tips in the book about how to do that.
Right. And just for my listeners, I would echo that in the sense that, you know, Ari is giving us a great overview of what I think is a process that you need to go through. So thank you for taking us through that. But definitely you'll want to look, or my listeners will definitely want to look at the book to get more information. I do want to talk about beliefs in the context of business. Again, you know, because a lapsed anarchist approach to the power of beliefs in business. So I want to ask you about Zingerman's beliefs. And one of them, which I think all of them are very interesting, but one that I think really will stand out to people is counter to the way it's phrased most places, we believe, meaning Zingerman's believes, that the customer is often wrong, but we commit to acting like they're right anyway. Mm-hmm. So explain what you mean by that, and maybe give an example of how this has shown up at Zingerman's.
Yep. So it's one of those phrases that's used throughout every service-focused organization. You know, well, we all know the customer's always right, but we all know that the customer isn't always right. So you create, you know, George Orwell's doublespeak, right? Which, you know, your work in marketing, of course, you have high sensitivity to language that's not accurate and that's not tied to reality. So every time we as leaders say to our new employees in training, well, the customer's always right, we're basically demeaning our own integrity because they're looking at a black cup and we're telling them it's orange. And they're not going to argue with us because we're the boss and they're on their third day.
Right.
So they go, yes, sir, that cup is black, whatever you say. You know, but what happens is people start to the whole conversation, the language isn't accurate. And then people's trust in the organization goes down. And it seems like a small thing, but basically we're saying we're creating a dysfunctional model of communication. Mm-hmm. And I think that erodes the integrity of the organization. It erodes the belief of the staff in the organization, et cetera. So what we try to do is just tell the truth. Customers are wrong all the time, but we're going to act like they're right anyway. So the outcome that we get, theoretically at least, is still the same, which is we're going to treat the guests with dignity, even if they're completely wrong, and work to find a resolution. And, we've refunded money for stuff they bought at other businesses. We've regularly replaced product that there's absolutely nothing wrong with, but it's not to their taste, or they ordered the wrong thing, which was their fault, but we're still going to take care of it. The other day at the Roadhouse, I had a woman who dropped her burger on her lap. You know, of course it's her fault, but we're just going to get another one. So my point is not to really change the quality of the outcome. We want a very service-focused outcome, but by actually sharing a belief that aligns with reality, back to your earlier question, I think that we're giving a higher integrity message to the staff, which builds their confidence and belief in themselves and in the philosophies and approaches that we're sharing with them.
You know, that makes so much sense. And I think that it just, as you said, I think it's it makes a broader statement or sends a broader message about the kind of business that you're running, that it is one of integrity and one that you can trust in. Before we go, Ari, will you please tell my listeners how they can learn more about you and Zingerman's and how they can get a copy of all the books in the series, including your latest one, Zingerman's Guide to Good Leading, Part 4, A Last Anarchist Approach to the Power of Belief in Business?
Absolutely. So I'm happy to dialogue directly with folks. My email is ari@zingermans.com, so they're welcome to email me with questions or thoughts. One of my beliefs is that I don't really love working in the mass distribution market. We work with traditional full-flavored artisan food. So with the books, we've done much the same thing. We do all the design here in town ourselves, and we print them here in Ann Arbor, and we're sort of off the grid. So the best place to get them is at our training business, which is Zing Train. ari.com. And while they're there, they might be interested. If they're listeners of your or appreciators of your work, I'm sure they would appreciate the Zing Train training seminars on leadership, on visioning, on open book management, and customer service, which we just talked about. So zingtrain.com will have all of that. And then if they want to see our food, because we do mail order and we ship food all over the U.S., including to you, I'm pretty sure, we would have that at zingermans.com.
Yes. I have to warn everyone who goes to the site or then gets a copy of the catalog, you will be drooling as you're looking at all of this stuff because it just sounds so awesome. I can't say enough about how great your food is, but I think what is really remarkable to me, Ari, is the foundation of leadership and of business and brand building that's underneath it. So I really appreciate you being here with me today to talk through everything. And thank you for just kind of putting out like a good word out into the business community. It is so needed. So thanks a lot.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening to the Brand as Business Fights podcast. Be sure to subscribe to it on iTunes or through my website, DeniseLeeYon.com. And check out my new best-selling book, What Great Brands Do, the 7 brand building principles that separate the best from the rest. Go to WhatGreatBrandsDo.com. And remember, good is the enemy of great. Greatness is a choice. Choose to be great.